Today, we're going to do something which is a little bit different, something we haven't done before on the podcast. And that is, I have a recording from one of our Nurturing Resilience membership group calls to share with you. What that means is that in our Nurturing Resilience membership, every single month we have two group calls. One group call is dedicated to discussing the nervous system specifically and all things somatic work based on the nervous system course in the membership. And then we have another call which is dedicated towards what I would call the practical or the physiological aspects of recovery. So pacing, sleep, blood sugar, diet, managing inflammation, your immune system. Obviously, there's a big overlap between the two. Sometimes we can't talk about sleep and pacing without talking about the nervous system. And sometimes we can't talk about making practical physical changes without talking about how we support our nervous systems to facilitate change. So even though there's an overlap between the two, we do have calls dedicated to both. And over the next few episodes, I'm going to be sharing one nervous system call with you, and then one practical call with you. Today's call is a practical call, which means we discuss some of the more practical or technical aspects of recovery. Specifically in this call, we covered topics relating to protein intake, how to increase your baseline and physical activity when your body feels ready to. We talked about rehabilitation for deconditioning that happens when you've been unwell for a long time. We talked about migraines. We talked about slow recovery after acute infection. We talked about feeling guilty when resting or when you have more energy but you still choose to rest, which integrated with a conversation about the nervous system and parts work. And we also talked about what to do when you do have more energy to make sure you don't spend it all at once. Even though this is a practical call, we do a little bit of somatic settling at the beginning of the call, which is a practice that I use on all of my calls. So feel free to join in with the somatic settling at the beginning of the call. And if it's not resonating at the time, don't worry. You can always just skip ahead and listen to the dialogue and discussion. And I hope that you will enjoy it, that you will learn something new, and it will feel supportive and nourishing for you on your journey. Welcome, everyone. I think most people have been here before already, some of you many, many times. If this is your first call today, welcome. This is a practical call, which means this call is focused more on, I would say, like the practical side of healing, which is kind of all the more information-based stuff, not so much the nervous system embodiment side of things. That being said, depending on how the questions go today, we can always talk about the nervous system as well, if needed. But before we go into that, let's just take a moment to arrive and ground. So we will do a little bit of somatic settling before we go into the call. So it's always helpful, I feel, to take your eyes away from the screen. I think sometimes just the idea of looking at a screen and all the faces can be a little bit activating. So you can just look around your space. And what I might invite you to do is just move your feet, move your ankles a little bit. So you're bringing some awareness into the legs and the lower body. And I just want to do this beautiful stretch with your arms. So if you feel like you need any other movement, you might just want to move the arms. Just come more into your body. And maybe then just see where the hands want to rest. Like I just feel today I want to put my hands here on my chest, but you know, you could put your hands across onto one shoulder. You could put your hands onto your neck. You could put your hands onto your forehead or your face. You could put your hands onto your thighs. So you could do one hand or both hands, just bringing them in any place that feels good to you. And as you rest here with your hands on your body, notice what happens inside of you. And what I'm hoping might happen is that there's just a little bit more slowing, maybe a little bit more settling down. Maybe you're a little bit more aware of your pelvis or your body and the contact points it makes with the floor or the chair or the bed or wherever you are. And there might be some signs of discharge, a yawn, a gurgle, a burp, or just a sigh or a big breath. When you feel ready to, I mean, you can actually keep your hands exactly where they are if you would like to, but if you do feel ready to move them, just bring them to rest comfortably, maybe on your lap or by your sides. And very gently, you might want to bring your eyes back to the screen and just check out the people, the faces, as well as the names. And then we will go into our questions. So I do have one question from Mara. Mara, I don't know if you wanted to start. Otherwise, we can also offer the opportunity to go first to someone else.
Yeah. So one thing is about protein. And so I have realized that I have not had protein enough in my life. And when I have to look, okay, what do I eat? I realize that it's a bit hard to realistically get enough protein without the powder. But I am worried if that's healthy, if I am actually not working out.
Yeah. Okay. So shall we start there? So first of all, just to normalize, almost, I would say, 80 to 90% of the people that I'm working with are not eating enough protein until they come and work with me. So it's a really, really normal experience and challenge for people to go through this idea of like, oh my God, I'm not, you know, getting enough. So if we look at protein, whatever it is, whether it's protein in an egg or protein in a piece of chicken or protein in a steak or protein in some broccoli or some beans or sort of more vegan or vegetarian-based sources of protein. Proteins are made up of building blocks, which we call amino acids. So basically, amino acids are little molecules and they form chains in the body. And then through these chains, we create protein structures. So this the reason why we want to eat protein, whatever form it comes in, is to be able to access the amino acid structures, because then we can, you know, reorganize them and use them for other roles in the body. And that's why protein is so important. So any protein that you're eating, whatever it might be, is ultimately, well, hopefully going to be digested, so broken down in the digestive tract into those amino acids, and then the amino acids get absorbed into the bloodstream, and then they're transported, and they go off, and they do their various things. So whether that protein is coming from a powdered form, a piece of chicken breast, or some edamame beans, the hope for all of that is that it would get properly digested. Obviously, digestion can be a bit of a roadblock for some people, and then it gets taken to where it needs to go in the body. So if you need to use a powder so that you can get more amino acids, it's not necessarily an unhealthy thing. What we might want to be aware of is what types of protein powders may be suitable for you. And that could be due to personal preferences or food sensitivities or things like that. So, for example, some people might be avoiding dairy. So to have a whey protein powder might not necessarily suit them, but they could have a pea protein powder. They could have a rice protein powder. You can even get beef protein powders. I think you can even get egg protein powders. So there's lots of different choices. Usually for clients, if they're okay with dairy, I do recommend a whey protein because it is the best digested and absorbed, and it's got the best sort of combination of amino acids. If somebody can't have dairy, pea is usually my second choice. And if someone has histamine issues and they're not tolerating and maybe a pea or a whey protein powder, then we could do maybe something like free-form amino acids where the powder, so to speak, has been even more refined just to include the amino acids. So to answer your question, it's not going to be bad for you. It's actually going to be complementary for you. The benefit of these powders, although they are potentially a processed food, is that even if there are digestive issues, they're probably going to be a better available source of protein so that you can actually get into your body because you don't have to do those extra steps of breaking them down and digesting them. Does that help, Mara?
Yes, I feel safer, calmer.
So even like I eat a lot of, I mean, I do eat a lot of protein. I do have dairy. I do have animal protein. I do have eggs, and I use a whey powder. And I've actually found since I started using a whey powder, just little things like my fingernails now grow like so much better than what they used to. So, I mean, there can also be, even for somebody who does eat a lot of protein, I think that the sort of availability of the protein powder has been really helpful for me, at least. And that's sort of reflected in, you know, things like my fingernails growing.
Is it possible to overdose protein?
I think you would, most people would reach a point of, you know, you would lose your appetite before you ate too much. So I think it would be highly unlikely, someone like yourself who's not had very much protein for years, I don't think you're suddenly going to find yourself on the other side of the scale where you're eating in excess. I think there has been research. I mean, this is obviously for more active people, anything between 2 to 3 grams per kilo body weight. So say someone weighed 70 kilos, that's 200, that would be 140 to 210 grams of pure protein a day. That's not 210 grams of chicken breast. That's the equivalent of about a kilo of chicken breast. So it's a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Did you want to move on to other questions?
Yeah, I could ask the other question that this was somehow related also. So I have somehow reached the baseline where I can exist in my everyday life and take care of my kid also. And so I was wondering what's the smartest way how to expand? Would it be to walk more or to walk faster to get the heartbeat higher? Or is it to build the, or rather use that energy to build the muscles? Would be your suggestion?
So I think it's the answer is always going to be quite personal to the individual. It depends. I mean, also just to say, you know, because there are people on this call who maybe are further, you know, back in the journey compared to you. I mean, to be already walking 7,500 steps a day, caring for a 4-year-old and doing activities around the house. That's amazing. So just, you know, you've done such a good job to get this far. And I think the next thing just depends on what the overall priorities are. If you're somebody who loves cardiovascular exercise and you've always wanted to, for example, be able to run again, it would make sense to channel extra energy more along that cardiovascular route. So maybe starting to do something that would get your heart rate up a little bit more. If you're somebody who enjoys strength training, or perhaps you're someone who you feel like maybe there's some musculoskeletal imbalances, or there's some deconditioning, or maybe some even aches and pains, injuries, niggles from a history of inactivity when you were unwell, then it might make sense to put some energy into building strength and sort of reconditioning the biomechanics of the musculoskeletal system. So I think there's no one way to do this. I think it depends on what you want your life to look like and where, you know, if you see yourself going for runs, then you need to train in that direction. If you see yourself building muscle mass, then you need to train in that direction. But the caveat I would say for this is it also depends what your body will allow you to do. Because sometimes people really struggle to get back into strength training, but they find cardiovascular exercise a lot easier. So it also depends what kind of natural, you know, roadblocks your body puts in the way, you know, as you work on expanding your routine. Do you have any follow-up questions about that?
I like that part of answer that I was somehow, I guess, that my heart was giving, that in the end, I just have to do that gives the biggest joy in my life and channel my energy there. And that would also help. But if I'm very honest about the other part of your comment, is that I have noticed that if my heart rate goes up in some activities, that's actually where my body becomes more sensitive. If it's for
absolutely. So what you could think about there is you could do intervals. So when I was working on my cardiovascular conditioning, this might not be accessible if you don't have access to a gym or a treadmill, but just think of this as an example, is I would walk on the treadmill and then I would put the treadmill at an incline and maybe increase the speed and then do that for, say, a minute or 2 minutes. So I'd do a minute or 2 minutes, getting my heart rate up, and then just go flat for five. And then a minute or 2 minutes, getting my heart rate up, and then going flat for five. And then maybe the first time, you know, we always have to pick somewhere conservative to start. There's no set rule about this, but maybe you do that three times. And then if that works well, you do it four times. And then if that works well, maybe you do it five times. And then maybe you're walking for at an incline for 3 minutes, and then you're only walking flat for four. And then so gradually you're sort of switching the amount of time in one walk where your heart rate is a higher versus a lower zone. But you're using that principle we talk about in the nervous system course, which is this principle of titration. Now, if you didn't have access to a treadmill, that could just be power walking for a minute and then you slow down, and then you power walk for a minute and then you slow down. Or if there's a hill somewhere where you live, you walk up the hill and then you maybe walk slowly down the hill. So there's lots of ways that you could play around with this. I think once I even, because I didn't want to be on the treadmill, I wanted to be outside, I just put a backpack on my back with a little dumbbell in. So it was a bit heavier for me to carry, and that got my heart rate up. So there's lots of different ways to play around with it. But I think what people do is they're like, oh, I can't keep my heart rate up for 15 minutes. So I'm just not ready for that. But it's like, could you keep your heart rate up for 1 minute, three times, and then gradually, little by little, extend that time? And it does require a lot of patience, and it does require being quite systemized. So you sort of don't do too much. But I think little by little, when you see yourself making progress, it can start to feel very rewarding. And the final comment I would just say is that sometimes my experience has been sometimes when we increase an increment the first time, for example, I use the treadmill walking. So now we add one extra interval to the treadmill walking. After that, you might feel a little bit more tired. You might have a little bit of adaptation symptoms, but they feel manageable. And then the next time you go and do that, same thing, keeping everything exactly the same, it didn't feel that bad this time. So you're just allowing a little bit of space for the adaptation.
Great ideas. Thank you. I'm very inspired now.
Okay, good. That's what I'm hoping for. And also just to say, because I think sometimes people are like, Anna, I just want you to tell me exactly what to do. And I always say, if I could tell you exactly what to do, I would tell you exactly what to do. But sometimes we just don't know. So we have to just pick something that makes sense, that feels safe enough when we check in with the body, give it a go, get the feedback, and then we either need to scale that back down depending on the feedback our body gives us, or we realize we can push forward a little bit faster than what we thought. But there's always going to be this starting point where we don't know and we have to just pick somewhere and start and then see what happens. So hopefully that answers all your questions, Mara. Does anybody else have a question today?
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you. I had two questions. Well, I don't know if they're really questions or if they're more sort of observations that I wanted to get your thoughts on.
That's in both. Either is fine.
Yeah. So the first is about migraines or migraines. I used to suffer from them sporadically when I was younger, and then they had sort of resolve themselves. I'd had a lot of investigations and there was no real sort of cause. It was just, you get migraines. My dad gets them too, so hereditary maybe. And they've always been with aura, so I have visual disturbances. And they'd gone away for sort of 5 or 6 years, I think, with my hormones sort of dropping off. They just sort of resolved. But I noticed that in the last year or so, anytime I get a cold or any kind of illness that sort of knocks me back, I get migraines, and I get them in a different way. I get clusters of them. So I'll get 3 or 4 within the space of a week. And I just wondered if it's something that you have seen with other people, and what might help it, or what you think might be sort of going on there.
So before, do you think there was a hormonal connection?
Potentially. I never felt like there was a pattern. They didn't sort of always come in one point in my cycle. To be honest, I think it was probably more stress related than anything else. But one thing I have definitely noticed with this sort of era of migraines is that, yeah, it comes on when I'm depleted because I've got some kind of cold, or I'm fighting off a virus or something. But also it's definitely blood sugar related. If I skip a meal, like last weekend, I missed lunch for various reasons and I had a migraine. It's not every time, but I think if I'm sort of already a bit depleted, it seems to be a perfect storm. So,
yeah. So I think usually with migraines, it can be this like combination of lots of different things. And as you say, it's like the perfect storm coming together. Like blood sugar is a really big one, because when our blood sugar goes low, we miss a meal and we don't eat. If we don't have the adrenal resiliency to stabilize our blood sugar, then we can get into this like hypoglycemic event, and that increases adrenaline. So that, you know, having low blood sugar is potentially life-threatening. So we obviously have inbuilt as human beings like all these safety nets to prevent that happening. So if we can't support our blood sugar, then it's going to be a big, big stressful event. So there is this sort of blood sugar stress connection which is happening. The reason I asked about the hormones was just because I do find a lot of women who do have the sort of cyclical nature of their migraines, it can be due to estrogen, but more so estrogen is a histamine trigger. And so I was just wondering, with the other trigger being more around some sort of infection, when there's when the immune system is a bit more activated. I don't know where you are in the whole histamine side of things, but if there is maybe sort of like the histamine backup just gets a little bit full around these times as well.
I am postmenopausal, and I have been on HRT for about 5 years. And I'm in a pretty, it's taken a long time to get there, but I'm in a pretty stable state with my HRT now.
Mm.
But definitely earlier on in my journey, I was having some histemic responses to low estrogen. So I used to get hay fever in the middle of winter for sort of no reason. So yeah, that might also be playing a role. I don't know. How would I test that?
I mean, the best way is to just, I don't know what your diet is like, but to maybe go, if you're in one of these periods which feel vulnerable, to just, I wouldn't say like go completely low histamine, because that might be very stressful in itself, but just cut out like the big offenders, which would be like, you know, tomatoes are a big one, especially like like something in a tomato sauce that you cooked yesterday and you eat today is going to be very high histamine.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. Things like fish. There's low histamine food plan on the membership site under managing inflammation. So you can have a look there. Okay. I wouldn't put pressure on yourself to make it super tight. I would just say, you know, take out the big offenders maybe around these vulnerable times and just see if that helps take the edge off. But the regularity with the eating, managing blood sugar. And then there is, I'm working with a migraine client at the moment, and she's found, let me just find the information for you. She was following sort of like this anti-migraine diet, and she took quite a few things out of her diet. a lot of which overlap with the histamine. Key things: dairy, caffeine, alcohol, citrus fruit, MSG, pineapple, banana, chocolate, yeast are like common culprits.
Yeah.
That's a lot of information. Okay. I wouldn't try and do everything all at once. Yeah. I would say first thing, keep the blood sugar stable, because that's something you know is definitely linked. And obviously stress management, like, you know, ongoing, you know, work in progress for us all. But then maybe think about like lowering some of the histamine load.
Yeah. Okay. That's really helpful.
I'll just put that list of things in the chat as well, the other list of foods.
Thank you. I do find, and I don't know if anyone else has a similar experience, that I can't tolerate caffeine at all anymore. And I used to love, you know, I wasn't a massive coffee drinker, but I would have one lovely filter coffee a day, and it's like a lovely thing to enjoy. I can't tolerate it.
I used to have like a really, really strong filter coffee on an empty stomach and then go to the gym. Like, just worst kind of combination for your adrenal glands. And then I remember when I got unwell, I remember having my coffee and I was being like, I'm fine, I can still have caffeine. And then I would just have these like massive like sweat patches like in my armpits after a cup of coffee, and I would be like jittery and buzzy. So like, also since then I switched to decaf. And you know, every now and again I'll just like forget, if I'm out or something, forget to order a decaf, or they mess up and they bring the wrong thing, and I have had it and my tolerance is much better, but it's still not great. And I think it is one of those things that might, you know, may potentially improve, you know, as your overall resilience improves, there might be some adrenal stuff going on for you. And the other thing, just sort of saying maybe for other people listening, is that because coffee can also be quite contaminated with mold. So people who are sensitive to mycotoxins or sensitive to mold will probably react more strongly, but you can get ones which are sort of, you know, if you want to have a nice decaf coffee or something like that, you can get ones that are mycotoxin free. The brand that I use is Exhale.
Yes, I've tried Exhale. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just find even decaf Exhale, I still can't really, it's just not, it doesn't make me feel good. So
I think then you just got to lean into that, like it's not for you right now.
Yeah. And then I don't know if anyone has other questions, but I did have another question.
Just go for it.
Yeah. So, well, or comment. I do find that these days, if I do pick up a cold or something, my experience is not linear. It used to be that, you know, I would start to feel a bit ill and get worse, and then there'd be a couple of days when you're kind of in the thick of it, and then you'd sort of come out the other side. But now it's sort of, I don't feel great, and then I feel terrible, and then I feel a bit better, and then I feel worse, and then I feel, and it's just sort of, it seems to go on for weeks.
Really long recovery.
Yeah. So I don't know if you have any advice around that.
So yeah, I think it's all kind of is linked to the sort of picture of fatigue, because the immune system needs to, one of the best ways I've learned about the immune system was in my psychoneuroimmunology training. And basically with the immune system, it should not take up that much energy day to day when we're well. And then when we're sick, it should be using like all the body's energetic resources to fight the infection, because it wants to save your life. You know, that's ultimately what it's there for. So it's like all hands on deck. We're going to, you know, we want to get over this infection. But when we've got all these other imbalances going on in the body, there's sort of this kind of like baseline of maybe some mitochondrial dysfunction. Energy is already low. The body's already in like a stressed state, adrenally depleted, you know, all the things that can happen to us. It's really hard for the immune system to get it together, to just go vroom and deal with whatever's there. And that's why these things linger. So we can add things to support their immune system, and we can, you know, we can support the overall immune resilience. I think I talk about that in the managing inflammation module, like the sort of things which are important for supporting our immune system generally. But then I think the overall picture of becoming more and more well is what improves that immune resilience. You know, we have to tread carefully with these things, but I also think doing the hormetic stresses, I have to be careful with this, but in some cases, fasting, heat exposure, cold exposure, those types of things, they can be really helpful for the autophagy process, which is like helping this clear out the cellular debris. And that can be good for your immune system, but those need to be done at the right time in a dose-dependent way that the person can tolerate.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They're like the cherry on top things.
Right. Okay.
This is all going to land depending on where you are personally, but does that help to kind of put some things into perspective and give some clarity?
Yeah, definitely. I think it sort of does feel like I'm in this difficult part of the big tick where I'm sort of... I'm well enough, but I'm still getting knocked down.
Yeah.
You know, quite regularly by things. So it's just.
Yeah. And I see that pattern a lot with a lot of people. And I also think it's like once we have a little bit more energy, we put more stuff into our life and we forget that we're actually more well and there's more stuff, you know, and then we're actually dealing now with more of the life load, and then things come in and we're like, why do I keep on getting knocked backwards? And it's, you know, the life load is also there. And unfortunately, like real life requires that we sometimes have to step up and do things before we're ready to. And I even find that myself sometimes. It's this dance of want to, need to, but don't want to, you know, and how do we find that balance?
Yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, it's messy.
Yeah.
It's messy. Yeah. And I think it's like, I'd love to say, oh, let's just do this X, Y, and Z and it'll all go smoothly. But that's really not how it is.
And you don't know if it's going to work either. So there's no sort of.
Yeah.
Just map to sort of take this step and it will lead to the next step.
Yeah. I mean, I always say, like, if I had the map, you guys all have it by now, right? You know, I'd be rich. But unfortunately, you know, there is no map. It's just working out all those little pieces.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for all your questions. Has anybody else got a map? Has anybody else got a question? Laura.
Hi.
How was India?
Oh my gosh, it was amazing. It was amazing. And the wedding was so different to what we thought and involved way more sitting down than I was expecting. So it was fantastic.
And you managed the trip and everything and...
Yeah. We did have to cut the trip early because I couldn't keep any of the food down. I think it's...
Oh, bless.
Yeah, so I think it's naturally quite like high histamine.
I'm sure.
Yeah, and so, but aside from that, fantastic. And I coped well and and even with the not keeping the food down, I think my body was like getting rid of it before I even had a chance to... react to it, so I didn't get like the histamine reaction. I was
well
just
done body.
Yeah.
It knew what it was doing.
I was just super hungry by the end.
Just a little bit of unintentional fasting.
So it was
working on your autophagy.
a lot better than I anticipated. But yeah, so I was actually wanting to ask you about, so I've had a lot of like the last maybe 6 months, I've been getting a lot of injuries to my, like with my back and shoulder and hips because my resting posture is so out of whack because of how sedentary I've been and for so long. And so I was wondering, because I'm still kind of not at a point of like I'm kind of rebuilding up a consistent walking, like daily walking schedule, excuse me. And so I was wondering, is it okay to start like a small amount of like rehab style strength training as opposed to building up my walking? Because I'm just feeling very weak for walking.
Yeah. Then I would say it makes sense to rather switch your energy, you know, usage towards the rehab, because you being in pain is just another drain on your nervous system as well. So you definitely want to address anything that's causing chronic pain. It's, you know, talking about this map that we have, this the elusive map, is that, you know, wish there was a perfect order to do things, and that there's generally an order to do things, but it's, we also have to just sometimes go with what feels right. And I think, yeah, doing some rehabilitation stuff would be helpful. I don't know if you've got someone that you're working with who can do that with you, or do I remember you've got a Pilates background?
Yes, and rehab background. So
you do your own program?
Yeah. And the other thing I was going to ask as well, even though it's going to be super gentle and small to start off with, is there anything supplements-wise or food-wise I can take to support doing that as if I was, you know, going back to the gym or something, even though it's going to be on a very micro scale?
Yeah. I mean, I can just speak generally and then, you know, you can make your own decisions from there. But so things that have been helpful, creatine, there is research to, at the moment, you know, saying that creatine can be really helpful in long COVID. I do have clients who take creatine. They really feel that it helps them. Some of them less, some of them more, but it's one of those like try and see kind of things. Other thing I'm a fan of is like curcumin, turmeric, just for managing the inflammation, joint inflammation, you know, generally inflammation in the body that can be potentially helpful. I think those would probably be my top picks. Like glutathione can obviously be helpful for the oxidative stress. Yeah, those would be the, and oxaloacetate is another one that is like a lot of research on at the moment. I've got a blog coming out on that in next month at the beginning of February. So look out for that at the beginning of February. Yeah, those would be my top ones.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, cool.
And you know, I wouldn't, something, I'm very biased, but for the right reasons, so something else to look into might be functional patterns. So functional patterns is something that I started to do, like when I was, I did it all wrong, but that's how I learned my lessons, is that, you know, I started walking, and then when I was ready to, then I started to build up my strength training, and I did strength training for about a year, but then I was still getting a lot of chronic pain, and I just got to the point where I was like, I cannot continue to be in this amount of pain. This is not right. And that's when I started doing the functional patterns. And I was thinking the other day, like how grateful I am that I found it, because I had this chronic neck and shoulder pain that, if I was honest, I've had on and off since I was 20. And now I don't have that anymore. And it's just been really, really amazing. They do have like an online course you can do. And because you are already have training in the human body, I think you would probably absorb that information quite well. I think for other people who maybe have less already kind of in that zone and have training in that zone, it might be hard for them to follow an online course and do it properly, but that's something worth considering.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for your question. Good. Nadja, I see your hand if you would like to unmute. Yeah.
Oh, I put that down. That's right. No hands. Everyone, I had a question that's, I suppose it's kind of about energy conservation and pacing. I'm basically like in a very nice position that I am feeling like I've got a little bit, tiny little bit more energy than I did have, but it's my default to just use that immediately, like in it. So like yesterday, normally when I finish my day's work, I'm like burnt to a crisp, and you know, then we'll spend the rest of the evening doing like really nice restful things. What I find is when I'm, yesterday managed my day really well and I've got a little bit more energy. So when I finished, I felt good, lovely. I then proceeded to decide to like start cooking the dinner for everyone, which is agreed. It's not my job. My lovely partner cooks the dinner, but I was like, oh, I'm going to do that. Start flapping around with that, found something else to busy myself with. And then by the time dinner was ready, I felt like total shit, as if I felt exactly the same as I would if I had dealt with the day really badly as a whole. And so I suppose what it would be helpful to know is any tips for like things to do when you find yourself like feeling good and like with a little bit of energy, but so that you don't just go and like blow it straight away. And also like, yeah, like in a situation like what I was describing yesterday, when I also probably don't really have very much, but also similarly, what I've noticed, which is really nice that I don't think I've felt in like 3 years, is sometimes waking up and feeling like I've got energy. Like, I don't remember.
Oh, that's so good.
Is that what that is? Which is really nice. And I think it's a bit weird to know what it feels like, because I mean, this is a bit more of a nervous system point, I suppose, but I've heard you talk about this before in the sense of like activation is just activation. So it kind of feels, it's a bit like, I think this is not bad, but it feels, it doesn't feel massively dissimilar to like stressful activation. But in those kind of moments, it's just a bit tricky to know what to do. It's like, I wasn't sure if basically it is potentially bad to like not do anything with that energy. So I was like, is there like a low energy way to use the energy? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does all make complete sense and such a dilemma. So if we think of this like in monetary terms, like you always, like every single month you get your salary and you spend it all on the things that you need to spend it on. Now you've been given a pay rise. Okay. And you're like, I would really like to start my savings, but I also want to spend a little bit of this. So it's like you're going to, you essentially want to be putting the bulk of that extra that you've got away into the bank account. And then in terms of like your human physiology bank account, you know, you're putting it in so that your body has then that energy for repair, for ovulation, for hormonal balance, for like other things that you might want it to be doing, as opposed to physical activity. But then you still want to do like a little bit of something maybe. So to answer your first question is it's not bad to do nothing. And I think that's like almost one of these belief systems we have to rewire, is like, I'm allowed to finish the day and not feel completely exhausted. You know, sometimes I would feel like I hadn't done enough unless I was completely dead by the end of the day. So it's like also feeling worthy of feeling nice and not doing anything is something maybe to explore. But then I think for you, it's just thinking about what things you would like to do more of that aren't too taxing. Whether it's, do you want to read a book? Do you want to listen to a podcast? Do you want to do a puzzle? Do you want to just maybe call a friend? Or, you know, what are the things, I think this might come down to you, just like maybe brainstorming a little list of your preferences, because what you like to do is going to be different to what I like to do. And just like having a little menu. And then you could, you know, at the end of the day, you've got your menu there, and then you could say, what do I feel like doing today, if anything? And then just pick something, and you can set a boundary around it. I'm going to do this for 20 minutes, and then I'm going to just lie on the sofa and cuddle the cat or whatever it might be. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's really helpful. Also, I think what I needed to hear was just the thing you were saying about it's all right to do nothing, because there's obviously, I know in my conscious mind that of course it's fine, that that's the goal. The goal is to finish the day not feeling like shit. But there's obviously parts of me on the inside that think that, like, there would obviously be a store of guilt that's accumulated from being ill, and so therefore, like, Jack having to do various things that I'm not able to do, or just any all areas of life where I'm doing less than I used to do. So, and my excuse for that, or my reason is that, well, I'm really ill and I can't. I'm like working to, I suppose that's the thing. It's always been like, I'm working to this capacity whereby I am unable to do anything else, you know? So then if that's slightly shifted, and so then it's like this space of like, oh, well, oh, there is this little pocket here. So I could just do this one other thing because surely I should be doing more because I'm not doing enough. And actually, it's just really helpful to hear it from someone else as a reminder that,
it's
not normal to feel like, most people feel all right most of the time. So you're all right to feel okay for, you know, an evening.
Exactly. And I mean, I'll just say this not because I necessarily think this is what's going on for you, but just for your own self-inquiry. We can talk about guilt. Yes, thank you for the reminder to pick up on that as well. I had a client say to me the other day, she said, like, she realized how much her illness was protecting her because it meant she could finally stop. And so this idea of, well, I've got, you know, I'm working and that takes up all my energy, so I don't have to do those things. But what happens when my work doesn't take up my energy anymore? And then it's like, I feel like I should now be doing these things. That's maybe something worth exploring, because as you said, there's this guilt between, Gabor Mate has this amazing quote, which I will botch completely now, but it's at least in the beginning stages of change, if someone does not feel guilty, they are not truly changing. So guilt is often the gap between what the nervous system is used to and what we are stepping into. So as we step into being in the world differently, the guilt is a part that's saying, oh no, you can't do that because it will there'll be a fear associated with it. So there's, when we experience guilt, there's a really nice opportunity here to work, go, okay, there's a part. This part is trying to protect me because there's a fear. And then you can work with that. You can use the rain practice. You can do some journaling around that. But yeah, somatically exploring the guilt, somatically exploring the part, you know, spending some time talking to the part, working out what the fears are, what the belief systems are. It's all really sort of helpful self-inquiry, because as we step into a new way of being or a new identity, if we're sort of referencing the big tick language, is the older parts are going to want to pull us back. And there's going to be feelings there that orchestrate that for us, whether that's a fear or a discomfort or a guilt or a shame or something else. Does that help?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, really nice questions. Good. We've got about 5 or so minutes left. If anybody else has a question, I'm going to quickly plug my laptop in 2 seconds. Anybody else have a question? I think there was just one in the chat from Marg. Is green tea a safe replacement for coffee? It depends on whether it's tolerated. So I drink green tea every morning. I love my Tea Pigs green tea. And that works fine for me. But I wouldn't want to drink a coffee every morning. Probably wouldn't want to drink a coffee hardly ever. So it just does depend on the individual's unique tolerance. Okay, if nobody has any questions, let's just settle a little bit somatically and then we'll end the call. And then before we do that, just to say that we have our next group call, which is the nervous system call on the 5th of February. I can see some of you already booked in for that. And then we've got our next practical on the 19th. I can see some of you are booked in for that already as well, which is great. Very organized. So let's settle. So again, you can just take your eyes away from the screen now, just disconnecting a little bit and coming more into yourself. Maybe it would be good just to take some movement in whatever way feels good for you. And if you don't want to move, you could just even imagine that you're moving in some way. Or you could just move your fingers, or just move your toes, or just move your jaw. You can move as much or as little as you need to. And then when you're ready, come into stillness. And you can just maybe gaze at somewhere in your space that feels good to look at. It doesn't have to be anything, anywhere in particular. And maybe just bringing your awareness to your pelvis where it connects with your support, whatever that might be. And watch for signs of anything slowing down again, anything opening a little bit more, even if it's just 1%. And take a moment to reflect if there was one thing that you might take away from our call today. What might that be? If you were to imagine just a little energetic imprint on your nervous system that you can carry with you, and it might change your experience in some way. And then I thank you so much for being here. I always appreciate your presence, your questions, our discussion. And just know that you being here and conversing in this way is helping everyone else as well as they listen to the conversations and learn from them too. So thank you for being here and doing your part. And I look forward to seeing you very soon. Go well until then, everyone. Have a lovely weekend. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone. Bye-bye.
So I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode today. If you think that this is something that could benefit your recovery and maybe you just need a little bit more support and direction and a sense of community as you navigate your healthcare challenges, the Nurturing Resilience membership is an affordable monthly membership that provides specific training on specific aspects of recovery. For example, the nervous system, blood sugar management, pacing, sleep, managing inflammation in the body, and much, much more. And we also have these support calls, which allows you not only to be absorbing information, but you actually have somewhere to go to ask your questions, to get feedback, to join discussion. And I think it's really important that it's a space where we hold both aspects. We hold the mind-body aspect of healing and recovery, and we hold the practical elements of healing and recovery, which is quite unique. You often don't have spaces you can go. Maybe you go to a medical professional and they talk about the medical side, or you go to someone and you're doing mind-body work, but they dismiss the physical side. And so it's very unique to have a place where you can go where both are not only mentioned, but integrated. And you have somebody who's perhaps walked in your shoes, in other words, myself, who can guide you on your journey while holding space for both aspects of that healing journey. So if it's something that you'd be interested in joining and participating in, you can join straight away. You get access to everything straight away. You can cancel at any time if it's not for you. And the monthly fees at this moment in time are £39 per month plus VAT. So I'll have a link in the show notes to the membership. And if you would like to join us, you would be very welcome. And I will see you there.